listening to Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live, a podcast exclusively for high school sports in Arkansas. Here are your hosts, Nate Olson and Kyle Sutherland.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on episode 22 of Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live. I'm Kyle Sutherland alongside Nate Olson, and we appreciate you tuning in. And now the state finals are all set. We've previewed 5 and 6A on Monday's show, and now we'll get into 1 through 4A as we inch closer to Hot Springs. And there were more fireworks in yet another overtime game in the 4A state tournament, plus a couple of close finishes, including a future Razorback hitting a clutch three-pointer in the final seconds, which we will, of course, get into that later on. But, Nate, we have gotten a little bit of rest over the last couple of days. At least I know I have to an extent, still a little tired and have a few more hours to catch up on before we head to Hot Springs, but before we get sleep-deprived again. But to me, it's all well worth it. I'm just soaking in these final days of the season before we really get into the spring sports.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Have you been to the Hot Springs, all the games? Have you been to, like, every day of them, the finals?
The last time I went to every day just about was probably, like, in high school or college. But I've been to some sparingly here and there. I actually didn't go to any last year because I was still working a day job. And actually, I went to one last year. But, of course, most of them were on, like, the weekdays and stuff, so I didn't get a chance to go down there. But it is a ton of fun, and I think – personally, you know, I'm a football guy. That's my main sport. But I think this time of year, though, with the state tournaments and then going to Hot Springs, it's just really hard to beat.
Oh yeah, no, it's fun, and I'm kind of a basketball junkie, so I love it. You know, maybe the one thing I would change is after a team wins, they play "We Are the Champions." You get kind of tired of that song after you've heard it 12 times in a row, or, you know, three times, maybe play a different song at times. But it's the win and the run out there in the pile, and then that song comes on. But it is a great venue. I've covered championships at other places, and the finals in Hot Springs really does the best job, and that arena is very good. So I'm looking forward to it too. And then it's on statewide television, so if you can't go, you don't have to be technologically advanced like I am not and be able to stream stuff. You can just watch it on TV. You don't have to stream it. So
yeah, you can.
That's a plus too.
Yeah, you've got the streams that we continue to get more of, which is a great thing just about every single year, at least. You know, of course, Maumelle, Bologna are two that they're in Central Arkansas that do a great job that you can see pretty much any sporting event for those two schools. And there's plenty of others as well, but Arkansas PBS will be covering this one. I believe that's channel 2 just about for everybody. I know that it is for me. They do the football, they do baseball, softball, and of course they'll be doing basketball as well. So if you're not able to make it to Hot Springs, definitely turn it on PBS and you can tune in. And so if you didn't catch our 5 and 6A recap, if you're listening to this before the games, then that's on for episode 21. That is on either Spotify or the website that we did on our Monday episode. And then now that the 4A, as I said in the opening, the 4A and 1 through 4A is done, that we're going to go ahead and cover those and for this bonus episode for the week. And so we will get into 1A. We'll start from the lowest class and work our way up. We'll begin with the girls. Mammoth Spring versus Norfolk. This is going to be a Friday game at noon. Mammoth Spring comes in at 32-7. They're led by sophomore Bryn Washam. She averages 15 points a game, and then Megan Upton also averages 10 points a game. Washam actually was the leading scorer, as she has been so many times this season, in the semifinals against Kingston there in the state tournament. Now, four of their six losses have come to top five teams in higher classifications, and some of their wins include they went over a great team like Marmaduke, who made it to the quarterfinals of the Class 2A state tournament. Very historic program there. Mount Vernon Enola, another great 1A school, and then also Winsboro, Texas, who I know has a good program there. And so they've really won, Nate, with great defense, and their head coach Scott Small said that that's going to be a big part of their plan to slow down Norfolk, a team that's got a good bit of length. They've got junior Jordan Rasmussen that's about 6 foot, 6'1". Can really use her versatility to shoot the ball around the perimeter as well as in the paint. And Norfolk, I mean, you look at some of their losses to Salem, a 2A semifinalist, Bentonville West, a 6A school. That was only a 3-point game. And then Clinton, a 2A semifinalist Clinton, a 3A semifinalist that really hung with Bergman, one of the few teams that's done that. And so both of these schools, they might be from the smallest classification, but they definitely have plenty of stuff to brag about. A lot of youth on both of these teams, and pretty much all the main players for both of these teams are either sophomores or juniors. And so we've mentioned this small-town basketball feel, and this will be one of the first ones that gets a chance at it.
And both of these teams, like you mentioned who they played at Mammoth Spring, and it's Mammoth Spring, not Mammoth Springs. You got that right. You're one of the few that got that.
I've been scolded on that before.
A lot of people have written that wrong too. But you know, that's great coaching. Both of those teams playing. Man, you're a 1A team playing a 6A team, and you hung with them. That there's no coincidence that both these teams are here now, because knew they had potential, play a tough conference or non-conference schedule early, get tested, and then maybe not test as much during the conference season, and then you're ready when you get to the tournament to face some tougher teams. You can lean on some of that experience. So that's a job well done for both those teams, and it sounds like this is going to be an exciting game.
Yeah, I think so. I've seen both of them on. I've only seen Mammoth Spring like once or twice. I know their play-by-play guy fairly well, and we've talked a little bit here and there. And I've seen a few, not really streams. I guess it's more, I guess you could say, highlights. But have seen Norfolk once, and so really just been able to. Of course, you know, when you get to these smaller schools, we were talking about the streaming just a second ago. It's harder to be able to watch them unless it's actually in person. Mostly Twitter and stuff like that, or the coaches will keep us up to date with it. But yeah, definitely looking forward to this one. I'm really high, especially I've done a little bit more digging, been able to find a few more things on Mammoth Spring. And what's crazy is I think just about all of their rotation from the starting five into their sixth man or woman in this case is all sophomores just about. So they're not going anywhere. Like I said, Norfolk is obviously pretty young as well. So both of these teams could very well be in the championship game again next year. So
yeah,
we'll go over to the boys in 1A. You've got County Line versus Bradley. County Line, I can't remember if I did the records a second ago, but Mammoth Spring comes in 32-7, Norfolk 32-6. And then on the boys, County Line, that's going to be for the boys at Friday at 1:45. And County Line comes in at 42-4. They're led by junior Andre Milam. He averages 17 points and about 8 or 9 rebounds a game. And also sophomore Cooper Watson, who averages 15 points. And they are in the same conference, Nate, that we touched on a few times this year in the I believe it's the 1A1 West with the new school and Ozark Catholic. And both Ozark Catholic and the new school had over 25 wins. I believe they both had over that. And County Line didn't lose to any of those schools except for the new school once. So they pretty much ran the table there. And then Bradley comes in at 35-5. They're led by senior forward Colby West, averaging 25 points and 8 rebounds per game. He's just filled out the stat sheets. I know he's made a few appearances on our top players of the week, top performers of the week. Yeah. And three other guys are also averaging double digits. Dante Woods at 12 points a game. Jalen Taylor at 11 points per game. Or I'm sorry, they've got five more. Jalen Taylor at 11, and then Joquan and Jamarian Harris each average 10. And so, Nate, this is one of those teams that Bradley is that's really kind of it's like Colby really puts up the stats there for the most part as far as like filling out the stat sheet and leading. But then he's got those guys behind him that could put up, as you see, double digits every single game. So it's really West and then kind of a scoring by committee, but nonetheless, these guys can put it in the bucket and they can play some really good defense. On the other side, County Line, they rely more so heavily on Milam and Watson. They've got some other guys that average anywhere from about 6 to 8 points a game, but it's really going to be a matter of if Bradley is able to slow down at least one of those guys, meaning Watson or Milam, it could be a long matchup. But then again, you look at both of these schools, two totally different, really, I guess you could probably say styles, but definitely two areas. You got the new school there up in the northwest corner of Arkansas, and then Bradley down really is about as close, almost as close to Louisiana as you can get. So two totally different worlds colliding here, and something's got to give.
Yeah, I don't know Colby West, but I've got some respect for him because he emailed me and said, you know, Mr. Olson, but that's my dad. He didn't know that, but he called me Mr. Olson, I think. And he said, you know, as a good young person would, showing respect, and said, "Hey, I'd like to be included in the athlete of the week," which, you know, we hear from parents, we hear from players. We love all that, because we may not know about you if you don't let us know, but his stats were very good. And if I remember correctly, Kyle, he averages a lot of assists too. So not just a score, kind of gets everybody involved. And you know, we talked the other day on the other podcast about, you know, when we look at these teams, and I told you that I enjoy kind of breaking things down and like, how would you defend teams? But it sounds like if you can contain him, you have a chance to beat him, because he is very active in their entire offense. So try to. Sorry about that.
I think I'm more upset that you still have a landline than the phone actually going.
I'm old school. I have a landline, and maybe some other time we have more time, I'll go into why I have one. But to go back to West, so I think the game plan for me would be to try to limit his touches as much as you can. I know he's going to bring the ball up some, but to make somebody else on that team hurt you, you know, and to try to frustrate him. But like I said, you know, the last time we were talking about North Little Rock, you know, people have tried that before. I mean, it's not necessarily a John Wooden type of philosophy or wisdom, but I mean, in this case, sounds like he's the guy, and is the guy by a long shot. So look for them to try to throw some defenses at him, some of their athleticism, and try to frustrate him, to keep him from getting to the basket, getting easy baskets, make him dish the ball off. And, you know, they've scored around him too, and he sounds like he makes them better. So this is going to be a challenging game for him. But he's done it all year long, and like I said, respect him a lot for sending that in, being respectful about it, and trying to get himself a little bit of exposure down there. You know, I looked at his huddle tape and everything. He's a good player, and I think he's just trying to let everybody know, the scouts, that, you know, he'd like to play college basketball. So this is an opportunity for him to be seen too, and I know he'll be ready to play. It's not going to be an easy task to try to shut him down, but I think that's, or contain him, but I think that's, you know, going to be how you beat them.
Yeah, and there's really no bigger stage, especially for a 1A player, than to do it in Hot Springs. And so he's got a huge opportunity here. Even if he doesn't put up 25 or 30 points, if he, you know, there's going to be college coaches in attendance, and they look at things outside of just scoring 30 points a game. So he definitely has an opportunity to really, really up his stock. And so he is, I've got his stats pulled up though, the rest of them. He averages 3.3 assists a game, and then a block per game, and 2.2 steals. So definitely, especially he can swatch you too and pick your pocket there. I mean, 2.2 steals, that's pretty solid. I mean, usually that's typically going to, I know at least in, I'm not really sure how much in high school, but I know in college, you know, that's typically going to be in the top half of conference play in most cases. And so, going into the class 2A, now we start with the girls there with Melbourne and Bigelow. I think most people on the outside looking in, Nate, you know, they would just kind of say, all right, let's look at Melbourne here and call them the winner and move on. And rightfully so. We've hyped them up all year. They've deserved that hype. They're currently 34-0, 65-game win streak dating back to, I think it's like October, November of 2020, but close to a year and a half ago, looking to win their fourth straight title. They've defeated Jonesboro, who could possibly be the 5A state champions, playing better than just about anybody in the state right now, certainly a top five team. And then they've also beaten Nettleton in the early half of the season. Kenley McCarn, she's a UT Martin signee. Nate, she might be the most under-recruited player, one of the more under-recruited players that we've ever seen in this state. And that's possibly because she's coming from a small school. And I know you probably say, well, Jenna Lawrence, when she was at Melbourne, was getting noticed. And now, of course, she's at Farmington. But I think that this girl is just severely under-recruited, and UT Martin is getting a gem. She had 32 points against Rector. It was 16 or 18 of those were from three-point range, And then she's got a sister, Caitlin, that's a sophomore that's really good too, also made one of our list. And so that's just two of the girls to name. I mean, they're just an absolute machine over there at Melbourne, the way that they have been able to just dominate Class 2A. And again, going for their fourth straight state title, there's just really not much more to be said other than that. But then you go over to Bigelow, 23-4. They've got some quality wins, especially in Class 3A. They beat Quitman twice, and then they also beat Salem in the semifinals. And so really good quality wins there. They've also, Tuckerman was the other one that, and Tuckerman actually challenged Melbourne pretty well too. So they're led by Aubrey Evans, Jenna Starks, and Emma Wilson. In most cases, they win with their length, but they can hit it from three, as we've seen them do. But I think, Nate, if they're going to have any chance in this game, obviously, whenever you play this Melbourne team, you're going to have pretty much a perfect game or close to it. That length is exactly what they're going to have to use, and if they're going to have any kind of chance in this one.
What do you think? I mean, we didn't think that that Little Rock Central would beat Conway. I mean, is this that kind of
I think pretty much anybody in 2A, just with what Melbourne has done, especially defeating, even though they beat Jonesboro in the early parts of the season when, you know, you're not really the same team that you are in the postseason. Just the fact that they were able to do what they did in the non-conference and just what they've continued to prove. And I've said multiple times that I'm not really one of those guys to look back at history and be like, oh, well, they did this in this year. They've done this before, so that means they're going to do that this year. I think to an extent there's an exception to that rule, and this is probably one of those when you have a lot of the play. I know, again, they did lose Jenna Lawrence, but they still seem to be clicking on all cylinders as they haven't had a single blemish this year. On paper, yes, it seems like who would win the game. But then again, that's why we play the game, and it could just be any one of those given days. But if I'm a betting man, my money is on Melbourne, just like most people's would be.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think that Conway game did show you that you do play them for a reason.
Sure.
And I also think, too, that, you know, we've talked about Melbourne a lot, but I don't know that they're getting the respect statewide that they should. I mean, you know, that winning streak, beating bigger schools, I'm not so sure that, you know, if they play North Little Rock, I don't know. You know, if they play Northside, I don't know. They might beat them. They might beat Conway. I mean, it just sounds like they are a very, very good team. And you took off a Division I player off that team and they didn't lose a beat. So I've said it, I would say it again. I'd love to see the overall back. I never got to see that. I wasn't here. But this is a classic case. And, you know, you have them ranked very high. It'd be hard to rank them number one. But, I mean, for a 2A school to be ranked, your rankings are coming out soon. I think three, right? Then they were third. I mean, that's really high. But they deserve it. I mean, they've met all comers. They've been dominant. And you would suspect that they'll do that again. I mean, but to win that many championships in a row, possibly win that many, and the winning streak, don't hear a lot about them. But that you should. I mean, there should be a lot more attention paid to them. They really deserve it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they do deserve a little bit more. I think that there's other polls that have them in the top 10 and maybe one or so in the top five. But I know that pretty much for an extensive amount of time that we've been really the only ones to have them in the top three. I think we started January when we first did them. I want to say that I had them at six or seven, and there was one or two that said I might have had them a little too high, but I stand by it. And I'm with you. I don't know that I could quite put them at that number one mark, regardless of what happens this weekend, even if they win by 60 points and then if North Little Rock and Greenwood, oh my gosh, I've got Greenwood at number two. I got to stop looking at my screen. I'm doing what I did the other night. If North Little Rock and Northside, regardless if that one comes down to the wire and Melbourne ends up winning by 60, I still don't think that, you know, you can put them at number one, and that's no disrespect to them. But I really do believe that you could argue a top three ranking. Where it's really going to get fun is when we argue, kind of depending on how the boys' side goes, of who's going to be number one there. I mean, it's if North Little Rock wins, I'll go ahead and say that they're going to be. But if they happen to fall, we might, and Jonesboro wins their state championship against Marion, then you could very well see them in the top spot. But that Melbourne Bigelow game will be Friday at 6 o'clock, and then the boys will play Friday at 7:45 right after that in the 2A between Lavaca and Lavaca. That's another thing I've been scolded on. I've always pronounced that wrong. Lavaca versus Magnet Cove. And Nate, I look at Magnet Cove. This is probably one of the games that I really didn't see this happening. I thought it was going to be Lavaca and either maybe Eureka Springs. And this is before we got into the state tournament, because, you know, I know some of these teams I'm going to mention were on the same side, but I thought it was either going to be maybe Lavaca and Eureka Springs. Even saw maybe Akron in there with Damian Bowman, a kid that's one of the best shooters in the state. But Magnet Cove, even though they came in, they were out of their conference, they were the 3 seed, I believe. And so had a pretty good record, had a really good season. Matt Williamson, who was the point guard for Poen in 2002 that hit the winning shot. Justin Moore was also on that team. Yeah. And the first round, senior Evan Ashcraft, he hit the game-winning shot over Maumelle Charter. So you're like, okay, moving on to the next round here. Then they upset Eureka Springs, and that's when they really got my attention. Again, I guess you could say I was sleeping on them, but I didn't expect them to get past Eureka Springs. I've been really high on them. I've mentioned that because of their guard play with their length with Shane Holloway. And then they beat defending champ Lee County, who I think a lot of us overlooked as well, the defending state champs from last year when they beat Caddo Hills. They beat them 54-53 on Monday night. And Ashcraft is pretty much their leader on this team. He averages 13.3 points per game, 4.6 rebounds. So they're kind of, I guess you could say, the Cinderella in this one compared to a team like Lavaca. You know, Lavaca's really, they're kind of a lot like
Lavaca.
What is it?
Lavaca.
Did I say it right? Lavaca?
You said Lavaca again.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. I'm just going to write it down here because I just have such a habit of doing that. So I apologize.
You're saying it right. Then you said it wrong. Then you said it right again. You said it wrong.
If Coach Reed's listening, I do apologize for that. Give me a mulligan on that, on those multiple times. But
they will.
But,
well, at least you're talking about them. I mean,
that's true. That's true.
You're not talking about them at all. You mentioned Lavaca or Lavaca for a lot of the season.
Well, Sherwood and North Little Rock, that's how it's pronounced. And a lot of people where I grew up in that area pronounce Derricks, however you pronounce. And so there's a whole argument on that. But Lavaca, they are very similar to Bradley. Now, they don't have a 20-plus, 25-plus per game shooter like Colby West, but they do have Colby Glidewell that averages 12 points a game, and then Luke Watson, who also averages 12. Drake Graham puts up 10 points per game. And also, too, Coach Reed, he raved about his point guard, Avery Walker, said that he's just really been good at running the offense, and he can also knock down the three. But this is a team, Nate, that's really – I mean, they've made some noise this year, have a really good record. Sitting at 34-2, that Akron team that I mentioned with Damian Bowman, they beat him 4 times this year. Damian really was they were trying to come back there in the first half. He led them back. Damian did. He hit like 3 or 4 threes in a row, something like that. That's what he can do. But in the end, the Golden Arrows ended up pulling it out for the 4th time and the most important time. And so I look at these two schools, Lavaca. Say that very nice and clear, and Magnet Cove, and it's pretty much, in a way, I guess you could say, a David versus Goliath from the way that this season has gone down, with the Golden Arrows being pretty much a favorite for the most part throughout the entire year, and Magnet Cove being one that people were watching but probably weren't really picking to be in this game.
Yeah, I love the Cinderella, and, you know, at this point, they've got to feel real confident about themselves. I mean, they've already slayed some giants, and literally with Eureka Springs, with that 6'9" guy in the middle, that's big. And I don't, you know, I don't think many people would have picked them to get this far. That's a huge accomplishment. And then when you do that, now you want to finish it off, but you've got the confidence that you've already beaten some really good teams. So, shouldn't be shell shocked or intimidated, because you've already taken down some teams. So that they're a dangerous team right now, I think, but that's a good story. I don't think either of these teams, I don't have it in front of me, but I don't recall them playing for a lot of championships. I don't know when they would have played before. but that's kind of interesting too. Lavaca has had a good run in football at times, but I'd have to look at it. It'd be interesting to see when they played in the state finals. I'm going to talk about that next week when we recap everything. Cause I'm pretty sure they're not regular. They haven't made regular occurrences. I don't recall that at all. So I think both of them are, maybe Magnet Cove has made one, but periodically, but I can't recall that. So it's kind of neat to see some fresh teams in there. And Lavaca has done you said beaten Acorn four times in a row. That's big. And they probably feel like they're very confident too with what they've done this season.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was definitely, for as far as like when I started really digging into maybe 4 weeks ago, when I really began to dig into some postseason looks, that was really the first one that jumped off the sheet was Lavaca, and then also Eureka Springs. So those were kind of the first ones that I began to dig into. And then it was probably about maybe the fifth or sixth team that I got to Magnet Cove, because I've actually, Evan Ashcraft that I mentioned, he's really tagged a lot of myself or SB Live and a lot of his highlights. He's done a really good job. I love it when players put their stats up. I know some people look down upon that because they think that, it should be all about the team. It's not. It is about the team. It's also about getting yourself recruited, and the best way to do that is on social media. So really appreciate people doing that, players or parents or coaches doing that. It really helps us give you more coverage. And so Evan's been really good about that. And so, I began to really dig into this team, and I thought, okay, yeah, they're pretty good. But I'll say it like I said at the beginning when we started talking about them. I certainly didn't think that they were going to get to this point, and I got to tip my hat again to Matt Williamson and his team. Done a great job. And then going to the 3A, we've got Bergman and Lamar at 11:30. Now, Bergman did beat them back in the regular season 59-48. That was on December 11th. But Bergman's been 41-0, pretty much not a single negative thing that you can say about him. Really have hardly been touched. Now, Clinton did give them a really good game, which big shout-out to Clinton. They had a fantastic season. I think that was another team that overcame a lot of odds and have a good bit. I think they've got a pretty decent bit coming back next year too, so could probably go on another run. But for Bergman, Maddie Holt has just been one of the more dominant players in the state all year, and the team runs through her. She's averaging anywhere between, I believe Coach Halitzka told us about 3 or 4 weeks ago, she was averaging like between 25 and 30 points. And has had multiple games over 35 points per game. But where she even more so excels is at the free throw line. One of the best free throw shooters in the state, somewhere between 92 and 94%. And so really just become one of the best players in the state this year and the girls' side of it. And then also Lamar comes in at 31-2. They are more of a score by committee as a couple of the teams that we have talked about just a second ago. They really, a lot of their players haven't even played past the third quarter. You've got Carly Williams, Shea Taylor, and Morgan Cochran all averaging double digits. But the leading scorer is freshman Corey Sanders. Nate, this is one to really watch over the coming year. She's a point guard averaging just under 15 points per game. And, their coach was really raving to me about them, about all four of these players, how they just play so well together. And again, they're really not even on the court for a full game most of the time. So that's something else to keep an eye on. Now, I can imagine, I didn't see all of the state tournament games that they played, but I can think that probably that they played a little bit longer than more so than they're used to be playing. But that's going to be something else to keep an eye on, because Bergman's probably going to keep their starters on the floor the entire game. It's very unlikely that that's not going to happen. So how are they going to adjust to that, as opposed to, not playing, but 75% of a game? I think that's probably going to be the biggest thing that I'm going to watch, because these are, I think, out of a very, very deep 3A class, when you could consider Center Point, of course, Boonville, Mayflower, Episcopal. This was maybe, and we've said this a few times throughout the course of this season, that 3A was probably the deepest class in the entire state. I think the two best teams throughout this season are playing in the finals against one another. The question is who's going to really outlast, because both of them score a lot of points.
Yeah, and Bergman probably will send a thank you note to Clinton if they win, that to push them the way they did, because think they probably needed that a little bit. If they, you know, if Lamar is as advertised, I mean, I know they lost to him. You said by, was it 11?
Yeah, I believe so. It was 11, and yeah, that game in December 11th. Yeah, I believe.
Yeah. So, but I think that was probably good for them to get pushed, because they could probably get pushed in this game. But I wanted to tell you, the rankings are getting ready to go up here as we talk on Tuesday afternoon. But I think if I was Bergman, I'd be knocking on your door to rank them a little higher. You know, undefeated, you can make a case for it. If they win this one, maybe they'll move up a little. But
they'll be in the top 10 if they win state. I promise you that.
Yeah. And they probably are banging on that drum for you to have them already in there. But to go undefeated in a season at any class is big. They've been dominant all year long. And Clinton, you know, they brought 400 people to the on their pep buses, I guess. But you got a note from one of the teachers over there, and that Channel 11 ended up doing a story on their fan response. So it sounded like it was hostile over there, and Bergman passed that test against a good team and excited fan base. So ready to travel over one more hurdle. And if they do that, I think you've got to consider them up in there, you know, higher in the top 10. I think they deserve it.
Oh yeah, I agree. And I wish they would have played, not necessarily for ranking reasons, but just because this is such a good team. I wish that they would have kind of taken a page out of like Farmington, for instance. I know that they're in class 4A, but they played a few 6A schools, and also, like we talked about, Melbourne playing some 5A schools. I wish that Bergman would have stepped out, just because I really would like to see how they fared, because I think they would fare pretty well. I mean, they are a loaded team. I mean, like I said, Maddie Holt's really the she's kind of their Colby West, the one that's like the big time, like step above everybody else with the stats way better than everybody. But by committee, everybody gets done the job that they need to get done. And so I really wish that we could have seen them against a bigger school, but that's just not the way it works, unfortunately. But yeah, if they win state, they will no question finish in the top 10. Going to the 3A boys, and Nate, this one right here might be some of the most athleticism that we'll see in any class as far as state championship goes between Osceola and Dumas. It's going to be on Saturday at 1:15. Osceola comes in at 27-4. I believe they are now on a 17-game win streak, led by senior Dalen Love, a fantastic wing, averaging 20 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, followed by Anthony Harris, averaging a double-double, 16 points, 12 rebounds, and then also Richard High and Terrence Nimmers, averaged 15 points each. And so another well-rounded crew here that just puts up baskets and plays great defense, but they're going to have to – these guys are going to continue to put up great offense if they want to beat Dumas, who's 28-3. They are just averaging or allowing 42 points per game really throughout the state tournament on defense. Now, they did take a loss to Drew Central, and I believe they also had a loss in the in their district tournament as well, or one of the postseason tournaments, but they've really rebounded. Brothers Mike and Tommy Reddick, and the Reddicks also have a little brother that's a freshman as well. Those two have been absolute leaders in multiple ways than one. Nate, I can't say enough about these two kids. I've talked to Larry Harris, their coach, quite a few times, and he's raved about their ability. I mean, they're averaging, like, I think around 18 to 20 points a game, both of them this season. I don't have that right in front of me. I know they've averaged 18.6 points in the last five or six games, but also around 4.0. I think they both have 4.0 GPAs, so both get it done in the classroom. Just really all-around great kids. Can't say enough about them. And like I said, their defense right now is just top-notch. And so Osceola might have more of the streak. They might be the hotter team just being on this 17-game win streak, but you can never count out this Dumas squad. They're here. They might have taken two losses that you might not have expected them to take, but the stakes are as high as they can get, and I think that this is probably, again, like I mentioned a second ago, going to be maybe the most athletic matchup, maybe probably along with Bentonville and North Little Rock that we'll see. Of course, then again, Marion and Jonesboro is going to be kind of like that too, but I certainly think that you could put Osceola and Dumas up there as one of the two of the top most athletic teams in all of the state.
Yeah, I was going to say this: they're There's going to be athleticism all over the court here, run and gun. Osceola, known for that. Covered Dumas when I was in the Pine Bluff area in the early 2000s, and they've had their moments in sports, in football and basketball. But I think this is one of their kind of rare appearances in the finals too. I don't think they made it when I was down there.
I think the early 90s is what I saw, like 93, okay. 94.
It's so been a long time. Years.
Yeah.
I figured so, because I knew it wasn't, they weren't there when I was there in 01 through 06. And I didn't remember since then. So that's a huge accomplishment. And the Reddick brothers, man, that sounds like that they've got a household of basketball players too. Their parents probably a hard time keeping those guys fed and going with all the energy they're expending and playing. But I know they're probably happy to do it, to see them have this much success and do well in the classroom too. That's a great story.
Yeah. 93, 94 was when they, I think they won back to back in that year. This thing I'm reading here, it's kind of misleading, but either way, close to 30 years since they have won a title. And they've had some pretty good teams too. Even when I was in high school, I remember that they had a couple of guys that were really good football players and basketball as well. And so really looking forward to that one. And last but not least, Class 4A, we go to the girls game between Farmington and Nashville, which is Saturday at 6 o'clock. Farmington comes in 34-1. And really, Nate, I think that these are the two teams that I felt probably most comfortable with on the girls' side, at least, of saying, you heard how high I was on Nashville a couple of weeks ago. I think really over the last few weeks, this is kind of becoming more clear to me that these were probably the two teams that we're going to see. And Farmington, they've been noticed all year because they were the runner-up to Harrison last season. Of course, being up in Northwest Arkansas helps your exposure. And then the addition, like we talked about, with former Melbourne star and Razorback commit Jenna Lawrence doesn't hurt. But you think of Carson Dillard and Jenna Lawrence and Reese Shiree when you talk about the Farmington Lady Cardinals. But watching the state tournament, and I mentioned this to Brad Johnson, their coach as well, but Megan Hernandez is one of the unheralded seniors, really kind of like maybe a Megan Gray on Greenwood. It's a senior leader that gets lost in the shuffle of the talent of maybe a few underclassmen. I mean, just the way that this team, I wouldn't necessarily say the team goes through her. I would probably say it more so goes through Carson Dillard from the outside looking in, but just from what she has been able to do, just the things that she does, we use the term a lot, that don't show up on the stat sheet. I think that that's one that you could probably look for, kind of like how sophomore Carly Sexton was the unheralded hero in the West Memphis game for Greenwood that hit that last-second three-point shot. I think that that's something you could probably look for Megan Hernandez, maybe if they're keying on Jenna Lawrence, if Nashville happens to key on Jenna Lawrence or Carson Dillard or Reese Shiree. That's one that you can look at. And because she's been around this block, she's fought through all this stuff that all these players have endured on the team, you know, losing in the state title game last year. And then you look over to the other side, Nashville, 32-2, only losses to North Little Rock and Greenwood. Now we're going to be top two in our polls heading into the state championships. Kylie Scoggins, Tania Bill, Lauren Carver, those are some of your three. Now, Lauren Carver actually hit the layup to put Nashville ahead in the semifinal game against Pulaski Academy that they ended up winning to advance to this game. But Nashville's not really one of those teams that you have heard a lot from. You know, they're a football and baseball town typically with a pretty good women's basketball program overall through the years. It's not their first year to be successful. So, I mean, they've done some things in the past, but just their location compared to Farmington's, you don't get a ton of coverage out there in the country. And I guess Farmington's kind of in the country too, but right outside of Fayetteville. But this team just really hasn't gotten any respect whatsoever, in my opinion. We've had them pretty high in our rankings following them, but I just don't really feel like outside of Southwest Arkansas, Nashville's gotten a lot of respect. And I think that they're going to show that. You know, I probably still give Farmington the edge in this, but I think that they're certainly going to give the Lady Cardinals a scare.
Yeah, and that would be an accomplishment because they've cruised right through most of the year. And that's the thing too, that you wonder about if it's tight. You know, Nashville proved that they can be cool under pressure. And you know, my neighbor has got a granddaughter that plays on the softball team. They're very good too. They could be a title contender in softball, but he watched that game, big scrapper fan, said, you know, didn't play particularly well, but were able to win it, you know, in the overtimes, you know, and that's a mark of a good team. You may not play great, but to get the win, they're definitely battle tested coming into this one. And so that's what you kind of wonder. You mentioned that earlier about Bergman. It's tight. How does Farmington respond? So that'll be interesting. But Nashville, definitely a good story, kind of overcoming, they got some credit, but not probably a lot of credit as far as pick to go to this game. So exceeded some expectations from the so-called pundits. And now here they are with a chance to get a huge win, and they would move up a great deal in the poll if they were to win this ball game.
Oh yeah. Cause right now I know that some Farmington fans are going to get some blowback probably, but they did Farmington dropped from 5 to 7 in the polls this week. But a lot of that has to do with Jonesboro just absolutely coming. I don't want to say coming out of nowhere, but the way that they really just, I think we had them just outside the top 10, and I probably had them a little bit too low to begin with, but we had them, Jonesboro, just outside the top 10. The way that they played in the state tournament, they moved up a pretty significant amount. Obviously, Central moved up a significant amount, Northside. So the way that everything kind of worked there in the top five, they did drop a little bit. But really, Farmington or Nashville, kind of depending on how this weekend goes, has a really good chance to finish in the top five, whoever ends up with the 4A state championship. And finally, in the 5A or 4A boys state championship, happening Saturday night at 7:45. You've got Magnolia versus Blyville. I think many saw this matchup coming. If it wasn't going to be a Magnolia or Mills, which of course happened in the semifinals, but Magnolia coming in at 28-0. Darian Ford, obviously everybody knows that name. Then you've also got Nevy Tell, Adrian Walker. This team's not just Darian Ford, obviously. I mean, you did lose Colby Garland from last year that played at Maumelle, but Darian Ford. I think Leland Barclay probably just said it simply and as best as could be. He cemented his legacy that had already really been cemented, but he really finalized it in as poetic fashion as you could find against Mills. Basically tied at 56, he goes down the court on a contested shot with two guys right in front of his face, nails a three to win the game. And, Nate, I just don't know if it could be any more poetic, because it's at Magnolia to go to the state championship. I believe that was his 101st win. So if he wins state, then if Magnolia wins state, that senior class will go out with 102 wins. That's really the only thing left to do, just because they didn't accomplish it last year, lost to Morrilton in the semifinals at Morrilton. And so to do this on your home court after all that Darian has done, I mean, one of the most decorated, well-respected athletes in our state's history, to go out like that, I mean, what else can you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, you need to win it this week, and that'll really cement it. But I mean, I think that was a heck of a way to go out on your home court. But I think if he hasn't already, he might have already done it. But winning a championship, I think you've got to consider him the greatest high school basketball player of all time in Arkansas. I know there's a really good player in this class, that Nick Smith, that's a top five player in the country. But when you look at what Darian has done in high school, he's been at one school the whole time. He's played as a freshman, started. He helped them win it. I mean, he was one of the reasons they won that as a freshman. So you've got to make the case for him that when you're talking about high school basketball player, I mean, I don't think anybody else. There's been great players, and I understand that throughout the years, but talking about somebody who has won that much, you talk about six losses in 4 years, you've won two championships, you've got a chance for another one. I mean, that's hard to beat. And I texted his dad last night, and I said, him going to that spot on the floor to shoot a three, I would say that the percentages are very high in any gym, but to do that in Magnolia's gym, when he's probably shot that same shot 2,500 times, I think that the odds of that are astronomical. I would never bet against him making that, you know, because he spends hours and hours and hours. And we saw him in August, his workout. I mean, he's probably, you know, gone to that spot on the floor like I said, thousands of times. I mean, it was he knew where he was going, and he knew what he was going to do. Except the one thing that I was going to kid him about is he made one mistake, and there was a story about Larry Bird that he told Xavier McDaniel, "I'm going to get the ball here, I'm going to shoot it there, and we're going to win the ball game." And he did it. He went right to where he was going to go, got the inbounds pass, turned and shot it. Then he told McDaniel, "Dang it, I left time left on the clock." And that's the only thing that Darian did wrong there was he should have bled the clock a little more and hit it at the horn.
Is that not the most Darian Ford thing though? Like, he does an incredible thing and he's looking for ways to be better. That is Darian Ford in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the kid, we spent the day with him. I've never met an athlete in Arkansas like him. I mean, I think at the time, I kind of tweeted out that he was a combination of Hunter Henry and Anthony Lucas. Just his devout Christian faith, his every box that he checks academically, 4.0. He is a leader in the church. He gives back to kids in the community. I mean, he gives kids clothes and stuff like that. I mean, just he is Arkansas is getting not just a great basketball player, but a terrific human being. And it means so much to him to do that and to do it there. I mean, there were 3,000 people there the other night. I think that there probably was that many there yesterday too. I mean, it looked like the gym was full, but he loves that town, and it means some in this day and age, Kyle, you know, you've got people going to prep school and I can't fault kids for doing that, but Darian Ford had those opportunities. He could have went other places. But he really believes in that town. I mean, that church, when you go there, when we went with him, I mean, those people have known him since he was a little boy, and he and his mom and dad, his family, I mean, they really cherished that. So I know that that shot would have meant a ton anywhere it was, but to have that happen in that gym, nobody's going to forget that. And I think it does. And maybe they won't win on Saturday, but I think that would really be the icing on the cake. But I think you definitely make the case for him to be the greatest of all time with what he's done. And last year, you know, they lost to Morrilton, and it was at Morrilton. That snapped like a 54-game winning streak.
Yeah.
So he's just his accomplishments. I don't think there are many that stack up when you look at championships, the win loss record, the fact that he came in as a freshman. How many kids do that? You know, come in as a freshman and make a huge, I mean, average 19 a game as a freshman. And I understand it's 4A. And I think one of the reasons why he gets rated lower on the recruiting rankings is because, you know, he's playing Hamburg and playing Warren and those teams. If he was at a bigger school, his ranking probably is higher. I really believe that because when he has played in the summer, he's battled some of these guys that are getting a lot of the attention, and he's done really well. He's taken home MVP honors in tournaments. The guy bench presses 300 pounds, which is unbelievable for a basketball player. He is a bull around the basket. Saw him in the King Cotton tournament, and you know, he's dragging three guys to the basket when he gets fouled and making those shots. So kudos to him. And That's just a great story for that community to be able to tag along with him. And he's going to bring Magnolia to Arkansas with him and hopefully to the NBA.
Yeah. And talking about the King Cotton Classic, I'm just kind of scrolling through their schedule again here, and the non-conference, you look at that, and that right there warrants a legit, I know there's been some arguments between them, Jonesboro and North Little Rock, of who should be the number one team in the state. And looking at this, I certainly think that they have an argument, and that's going to be a really fun, especially if all this happens like many expect it to. I'm not saying me, I'm saying like many. If North Little Rock, Wayne State, Jonesboro, and Magnolia all win, that's pretty much what the podcast will be about next. Yes, we'll do a little bit of recaps, but that's going to be probably at least one full 30-minute at least segment that we will discuss that, because I think that there are plenty of arguments for all three teams, assuming that they all finish with a state title. But yep. I mean, just looking at Magnolia's non-conference schedule alone, I mean, it's got a win over Lake Hamilton, Bartlesville, Cardinal Ritter College Prep, Huntington, Parkview, who was at number four for the majority of the season until they lost to Lake Hamilton. So very impressive there, but they still have to play the game, and they are playing the Blytheville Chickasaws, who are a fantastic team in their own right. I think that all of that credibility and all of the praise that we just gave Darian Ford and Magnolia is 100% warranted for what they've done. But Blytheville's also had an incredible season as well. They did drop a few in the postseason, but it could have been a blessing in disguise, just the fact that you are on the opposite side of the bracket and you have to wait until state to play Magnolia, and then you get there on the highest stage and have a chance to beat them. And so they're pretty much going to win on the inside out with Rashad Marshall down there in the paint, just an imposing figure there at power forward. As of around the beginning of conference season, I know he was averaging around 19 points and 10 rebounds. I haven't gotten his updated stats, but I know he's pretty much stayed pretty close to right around there. And then also a guy that's really come on as a junior. So Rashad is a junior. And then Tyree Jackson, his classmate, just really began as the conference season started. He got into double-digit figures, averaging about 11, 12 points a game. And their head coach, Mackenzie Pierce, has told me he's really been getting some D1 looks as well. So that's a guy right there that can play some shooting guard for you, Tyree, but also play the more of a wing role, stretching over to the three as a small forward. And so that's pretty much what they're going to win by. I think this is kind of another game like we had talked about with Bigelow Girls and Melbourne. I think that Blytheville's probably going to have to play dang near a perfect game, just like anybody did. And Mills didn't play a perfect game against them, but still had a really good chance, and as one of the top three teams in 4A. And I think that Blytheville, even if they make a mistake or two, could possibly get the Panthers. But at the end of the day, it's just I don't know that I can really envision Darian Ford and then that senior class not finishing the job. They felt like they didn't do that last year. And so I just think in most years, probably 9 times out of 10, that a team like Blytheville with the length and athleticism that they have, they could probably do it. But I just don't know if this Magnolia team, it doesn't really matter who's playing them. I don't think that they're going to be denied this year.
Well, I agree with you. And I go back to it was one of the games in the King Cotton. He was 11 for 21 from the free throw line. He's a 80% free throw shooter, so he didn't shoot it well. I think part of it was the background at the convention center, but the team had to pick him up a little bit. And then in the second half, he kind of turned it on. But my point is that you would think he's going to have to score 35 or 40 to win, but that's not necessarily the case with this team. They feed off of him, but they're also used to him getting a lot of attention. And other guys, like Adrian Walker and Tevi Noel, those guys have hit some big shots. And you've got Devontae Walker in the middle, which I didn't know this. He's about 6'3 or 4. I mean, he plays bigger than that. But, I found out just recently he's never played in the paint before. He's always been a perimeter guy, and they've moved in there. But he does good. He's active in there. But they won't be shell shocked if Darian's not feeling it. If he's having problems and trying to work through that in the first half, it won't shell shock them. It's not a situation where they'll panic. But I also just think that, great players, I don't like that cliche, but it's the big players show up for the big games, that kind of thing. But with him, he is so good and so well prepared, just with the work ethic. These are the moments he lives for. I mean, and that's, I feel that like that about Nick Smith too. I mean, that he wants to win a championship. He's never won one. I think he's going to play out of his mind. And I think that the Darian will too. And I think he'll have a classic Darian Ford game where they will try to double him. And I think he's just going to still, kind of defy the odds there just because he's so good. And I think that he can get them in some foul trouble too. But from their point of view, it's if you can, I think it was Cardinal Ritter, might've been the other game, but he was frustrated. So that is a good thing. If you're playing them, you can get him to miss some shots, to take some shots that aren't as good, double team him. the 6'9" guy in the middle, you know, take a charge or something like that, get him some foul trouble. That's how you're going to beat him. But this team is a team. They're not just Darian Ford. And I think they showed that in the tournament, and that's why they won the tournament.
Yeah, Walker was another one. I mentioned a list there of a few different guys. Or not Walker. Who was the one that you mentioned? I mentioned Adrian Walker, and who did you just talk about?
Devontae Walker.
Yeah. I think they're brothers or cousins. I missed one of them. I knew there was two Walkers, and I missed one of them. But
yeah
just another. And I think it's typical whenever you have a star like this on the team. Just like, for instance, you know, most people can't name anybody past Joseph Pinion. A lot of that's because they did have a pretty new team this year. You know, losing one of their other main guys, I know I can't remember his name, but he went to play prep school this year.
Harry Tolles.
Yeah.
Harry Tolles.
Yeah. So with him going to play prep school and then some graduations, you had a lot of turnover there and new faces. And so that tends to happen on teams that have one major star on them. And so, well, that'll get it for the 1-4A coverage there. Almost an hour long of stuff. And, you know, it's bittersweet, Nate. This is outside of recast. This is the last one for basketball that we have done. I'll tell you, this is my first year doing statewide. And, you know, I've done Central Arkansas the last couple of years. And it is a grind, but it's incredibly rewarding. You know, we've had a great basketball season, a lot of great feedback from coaches, players, parents that, you know, I've appreciated what we've done, and that's what makes it all worth it. You know, we certainly haven't heard all good things. You're not going to in situations like this, but overall, you know, it's just been it's been fantastic. You know, we're not done with the school year yet. We still got plenty left. Like I've mentioned on the last few shows, moving forward, we're going really past next week. We'll have Kevin Bohannon on pretty much every week to talk about baseball, and then we'll be discussing softball, and we'll have plenty of articles, whether it be player list or team rankings, especially here. Once basketball's done, we're going to dive really, really far into that. And so,
yeah.
But we will be back on our regular schedule next week, just doing the weekly episodes that'll drop on Mondays. And so be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. You can listen on the website, scorebooklive.com, under the Arkansas tab in the top left corner, or on Spotify. Also, too, if there's anything we're missing, please let us know, arprepextra@gmail.com, XTRA. For Nate Olson, I'm Kyle Sutherland. We will catch you next time.